Jason, for the third time in the history of the NFL, it's Bears-Packers in the postseason. We'll preview it coming up on Hallis Intrigue. Hi, I'm Patrick Finley. He's Jason Leisure. Jason, it's Packers week and playoff week rolled into one. The Bears are getting ready to play Saturday night at Soldier Field. Can you contain yourself?
Isn't it crazy? It really is. That this is only the third time this has ever happened in the century that these teams have been playing each other?
Well, and the first time it happened in 1941, it was more of a tiebreaker than it was like a playoff. So really, it's only happened once, and that was the last year that the Packers won the Super Bowl, wasn't it? Aaron Rodgers came to Soldier Field, beat up on a beat-up Bears team, and went on to win the only Super Bowl he's ever won. So, I mean, if, in the modern NFL, I mean, since World War II, it's happened once, and yeah, it's Saturday night, part two.
It's hard to have, I mean, there's just always these dueling immediate and long-term perspectives. So in the immediacy, you could be the Bears and sit here and be in the more recent short-term perspective, be like, oh man, really thought they could have got the number one seed, really kind of frustrated with the last 2 weeks. But if you zoom out and you look at this from the big picture, let's go all the way back, Pat. Let's go all the way back to 2022. Ryan Poles, around this time of year, introduced as the new GM of the Bears. And I tell you, or I tell a Bears fan, here's the deal. It's going to be a little rocky for a bit, but you are going to be 4 years from now sitting here with a division championship, a coach that you feel really good about, a quarterback that you feel really good about, and you will be the number two seed in the NFC hosting a playoff game against the Packers. I think everybody's in. I think everyone says, yeah, I'll take that deal. Even knowing that the burn down year is coming where you're going to waste every single Sunday that season. This is what it has to build toward. And this is always my criteria for covering any professional sports team, whether it's been the Miami Dolphins or the Miami Heat or the Chicago Bears. Is I will grade you on this above all else. Are you contending for a championship, or are you clearly taking the steps to get yourself there? They have put themselves in position where they're doing both. I mean, they are in contention as much as anyone else. You can sit here and be like, I'm not sure, they're the Bears, you know. It's the number two seed in the NFC. And it happens to be a year where the playoffs are wide open. I mean, I see no scary, just insurmountable team on either in either conference. This is a really, really good place to be for the Bears from a football standpoint, and it is a great place to be if you're watching on TV. This is what you want.
Did you describe the 3 years Matt Eberflus was here as, quote, a little rocky for a bit? If you were trying to make this deal with me, if you were the devil, I'd sit there and be like, describe Rocky before I agree to anything.
There was a 7-10 year.
I mean, there was a 7-10 year. Two assistant coaches were fired for being creeps. They fired the head coach during the season for the first time in the 100 some odd year history of the franchise. And they drafted a quarterback number one overall who they kind of tried to ruin for at least his first season. All's well that ends well, I guess, in that regard. And, you know, we've had the Bears say before, like, if that wouldn't have happened, maybe it wouldn't have taken them toward Ben Johnson. And maybe the most exciting part about this season, including Saturday night, is that you feel pretty good about Ben Johnson Saturday night, but going forward. And you feel pretty good about Caleb Williams Saturday night, but going forward.
I think that's the biggest difference between the last two times they've been in the playoffs. I think that you really, more so than you do now, you really had to convince yourself in 2018 that Mitch Trubisky was going to become a star. That season, if you take out the 6-touchdown game against Tampa, that season does not look great statistically. And while it was not, Matt Nagy was just as popular as Ben Johnson at the time, but it unraveled so fast after that. There is no, and 2020 was kind of a joke playoff appearance. Even Cole Kmet said that this week. That Bears team that lost their last two games and was lucky to get in at 8-8 and had no chance of going anywhere. that there was a lot of negative feelings around the organization going into that. Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace deserved, really, on merit, to be fired at the end of that season and got an extra year, basically because of COVID, I think, and some sympathy over that. This feels so much more so like the start of something. Like, this has been a work in progress. This has been a transitional season. Ben Johnson hates when I call it that, but it is. It happens to be that they've won during that to get to 11-6 and a number two playoff seed and have a real chance. I mean, this team has really as good a chance as anybody to do some damage in the playoffs, and it's just getting started.
Nobody scares me. If I'm a Bears fan, that's the best news here in the playoffs. And I think what's going to be really thrilling about Saturday night is all the context we just talked about, all the future we talked about in terms of what there is to be excited about. You're going to show up or turn on your TV Saturday, and all that's going to matter is what happens that next 3 hours. And what's the last time that happened around here? That we can take a game and its outcome on its face and not try to make it say less or more than it should. This is one of those games where you're gonna remember it. I was thinking back to 2013, the end of Mark Trestman's first season. There was a game, the final game of the season, at home against the Packers. Bears win, and they're in the playoffs. They did not win. Chris Conley played the wrong coverage, and Aaron Rodgers threw a touchdown in the final minute of the game. But there was a moment there where linebacker, I believe it was James Anderson, the Packers had fumbled a ball, and it wasn't blown dead. And it just stood right, and he stood right in front of it and didn't pick it up. And I still remember that name. What is it? 12 years later? Mm-hmm. What happened Saturday night is going to literally etch the names of some of these players, for better or for worse, into the minds of Bears fans. Really, for the first time since Cody Parkey, probably.
Yeah, it's crazy the weight that it carries. You're absolutely right. This is you make a name for yourself, for better or worse, in this kind of game in a way that you wouldn't have if they were playing the 49ers.
No, absolutely not. In terms of what's important Saturday, we've heard all week, what, red zone defense? Is that kind of, if you had to make a list of here's what needs to happen for things to go the way the Bears want them to go.
Man.
It's a long list. I'll start at least. I think red zone defense is critical because I think we're at the point now where we accept that the Bears defense is not good enough to force three and outs often.
So we're past that. So we're not saying what's important Saturday is fix the defense and be good against the run and have a good pass rush and
no,
it's a third and long.
We're
past that.
I am.
We accept the limitations. And we say, okay, it's going to have to be hero ball like it's been.
Well, no, not necessarily. You know, the last time they played the Packers were in the red zone 5 times and kicked 5 field goals. Great.
Yeah.
You can win that game.
But you let them in the red zone a lot. So yeah. It's hero ball. I mean, it's going to be red zone stops and takeaways.
Right. And we've seen what happens when that doesn't go that way. The 49ers scored 6 touchdowns 2 weeks ago against the Bears. I think that's the first thing I'd look at, because I don't believe that Jordan Love's going to turn the ball over. He rarely does. And, you know, if the Bears get one, I think that's probably about right. And this is a defense that at times this year when it's looked dominant, it was because they get 3. So I think the path there is to hope that you're trading 7s for 3s. And I don't know whether the Bears offense, if it's only going to show up for the second half of the game or the fourth quarter of the game the way it did last week. You know, the question is, can they keep up?
Can I tell you a fact, and then you try to explain it to me?
Okay.
Because the Bears fans aren't going to like this, but it's just true. It is a fact. This is the worst defense of any of the playoff teams, statistically. Why?
Yeah, that's...
Why is it, though?
In terms of yards or points?
Both. Most yards, most points allowed of any team that made the playoffs this year.
It's because they win games by taking the ball away. And I mean,
spent a bunch of money, Pet. Yep. There's a bunch of draft picks. There's a bunch of names, you know, Jalen Johnson and Kevin Byard and Grady Jarrett.
I mean, the short answer is they can't rush the passer the way they need to rush the passer. And that is my first point of evidence when people ask me, is there a reason why we shouldn't believe the Bears can win the Super Bowl? And the answer is, I think they need to find a way to rush the passer, and they haven't done that yet. Dayo Odengbo, who they're paying a ton of money to, has been, you know, was hurt half the season, won't be back till next year. I think they've gotten a boost from Austin Booker, but I don't think it's been enough. I think Montez Sweat has been good. I suspect, and he was asked this the other day, I suspect he's hurt. And he said, oh, it's nothing that, you know, I'm putting on the injury report or whatever. But just when you look at his usage, it seems like, I don't want to say he's wearing down, but, you know, maybe that changes Saturday. Maybe Saturday they go, the hell with it. You know, we're going to play you 85% of the time. But that's not what's been happening. And then from the middle, I think Grady Jarrett is okay in spurts. But that's it. Those three guys are the only D linemen, I think, whose names you will even hear called on television, right? Like, yeah. I mean, do we have any faith in Jervon Dexter?
It all starts there. I mean, by the way, Sweat's playing time had been trending at one point toward a career high
right.
this season, and it has tapered off, to Patrick's point. Yet that D-line, offensive and defensive line, usually you have to put major resources into there, and you're seeing the result of putting major resources into your offensive line. They have put major resources into the defensive line. Their starters, their two starting defensive ends, are highly paid acquisitions, Sweat and Odengbo, mm-hmm. who's out for the year. Their interior guys are Jarrett, high paid free agent acquisition, and Dexter. That is a premium resource, putting a second round pick to draft Jervon Dexter. There's really no other way to put it than they have misallocated that spending. I mean, that just... they've put their money into the wrong guys to this point. Unless those guys turn it around, you're still looking at that. They're, everybody but Montez Sweat is subject to replacement if they can figure out a way to do it. Now, contract-wise, I don't know that they can with Odengbo and Jarrett. But that defensive line is the source of all their problems, because when we sit here and say they lead the league in takeaways, that's amazing. They are a top half of the league red zone defense. That's amazing. And then why aren't they good? Well, they're not a steady play-to-play defense. How do you be a steady play-to-play defense? You stop the run. They don't do that. And you get a lot of pressure on the opposing quarterback, which would seem to be a phenomenal give them a phenomenal chance with how good we think their secondary is, but they don't get a lot of pressure on the quarterback. So they don't do the basics. They are reliant on these hero plays and by horrible mistakes by the other teams. And once you get to the playoffs, there's a lot less of that. There are no more Russell Wilson and Joe Flacco's out there and J.J. McCarthy's just giving you the ball.
You have a path for them, and your path involves the Bears offense doing what it can to keep the Bears defense off the field.
Yeah, I think when you were talking about, like, how do we fix the defense, and you threw out stop them in the red zone, you're right. But I think if we're looking at realistic options for how to fix the defense, you fix it with your own running game. And they ran the ball. Menungai and Swift both were, I want to say, 4.7 yards per carry against Green Bay. Green Bay is a, like, middle-of-the-road run defense. And I think that that's the key to everything for the Bears. Remember in the Cowboys game, they had that possession back in week three where they had it for, like, 9 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how do I limit the exposure for a very vulnerable defense? You just don't put them out there as much. You run the ball well.
The last game that the Packers played in which they were trying, because in week 18 they played backups. And I was up there yesterday. I was in Green Bay. And one of the things they said that I guess is true and I hadn't really thought of was that part of the reason they rested all their guys in week 18 was in week 18 last year when they didn't, the Bears played them and beat them. Jordan Love hurt his elbow. Mm. And Christian Watson's knee exploded. Mm. And that was the lesson they needed to learn for why you don't, to quote Ben Johnson, we play football. That was a reason to say, no, we're not going to play football this week. The last game they tried, week 17 against the Ravens, very good at running the football, granted. The Ravens ran 53 times, Jason, for 307 yards. 5.8 yards per carry, a long of 30. Derrick Henry wound up with 36 carries, which is just bananas, for 216 yards. I realize that the Ravens, particularly schematically, are very different than a lot of teams in the NFL. But that's your path. I mean, your path isn't to run for 300, but if they can do 200, 180, boy, that would be the way to get there, right?
I don't think you need to scheme around Caleb Williams to try to minimize what you ask of him. But I do think the more you help him with the run game, the better his chances. I don't know. Maybe with Caleb Williams, he needs to throw the ball 40 times to get in a rhythm. But I think that running the ball is really the best thing that it does is eats possession and limits exposure on defense. The other thing it does is if you are running the ball well, if you are getting into second and five regularly, it just opens up the whole playbook. And it opens up that play action where the indecision that you cause in a defense of whether it's a run or a pass is everything in the NFL. And they need that. I think, can I ask you about one thing that you mentioned with Green Bay resting their starters? I think I know your football politics well enough. You err on that side of it, don't you? You err on the side of minimize injury risk any chance you get, don't you?
You know that because I err on the side of, in the preseason, don't play anybody. Yeah. That's you and I have covered exactly one playoff game together, so I don't know that I've had to state my postseason politics. Yes.
You probably would have done what the Packers did.
Yeah, I mean, the Packers weren't going to go anywhere. They were the seven seed whether they won or lost, so yes, I would. I have zero problem with the Bears playing everybody because they needed to get the second seed. Because this season of all seasons, there is a non-zero chance that the two seed can host three games. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And boy, you want that. You'd rather have that than having to go, Seattle's the one seed, but you don't want to go. I mean, I wouldn't have wanted to go to Philly in week two, which is what would have happened most likely had the Bears been the three seed. I think they had enough to play for on Sunday that I had absolutely no issue with it. As it turns out, it's probably going to cost them C.J. Gardner-Johnson, who suffered a concussion. And as you and I are sitting here right now, he's still in the protocol. But I'm okay with that trade. In part because Kyler Gordon may be back. Let's talk about him and Roma Dunze real quick. I think that they are fun talking points because these are guys who, at the start of the season, if I said name the Bears' five best players, they're both on that list, right?
They're 5 to 10
at worst. And Kyler Gordon's given them very little this year. He's
three games.
Three games because of various injuries. He's been practicing this week after he hurt his groin and went on IR for 4 weeks. And then you have Roma Dunze, who's got this foot issue that's bothered him off and on in various ways since at least the middle of the season. Do you think they'll play, number one? Number two, what impact is reasonable to expect from them? I don't think either you or I are sitting there going, they are going to be the stars of the game. I think that's a big ask.
We're recording this Thursday. We have not seen the injury report yet. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing the injury report is going to put questionable for both of them.
Yes.
Just to leave it as gray as possible. But I would guess they both play because I think the bar to clear is lower in the playoffs. You don't have to feel good. You just have to feel good enough. Now, impact? Great question. I feel better. I feel more optimistic about the impact that Roma Dunze can make than Kyler Gordon. And part of that is because you don't have to put that much on Roma Dunze if you don't choose to. He's been out five games?
Yeah, since November. The last game he played was November 28th.
Caleb Williams has played pretty well in those five games overall without him. And Colston Loveland continues to improve. DJ Moore was their number one receiver for the last couple of years, and I don't think DJ Moore has gotten worse. The offense, Ben Johnson's offense, seems to scheme two-plus receivers open on every play, just to the naked eye. So Roma Dunze is a bonus to what you're already doing. Because you get to choose where the ball goes offensively. You don't choose where it goes defensively. So if Kyler Gordon is struggling, mm-hmm. Jordan Love, Matt LaFleur can pick that out.
and probably will, given what the Lions were able to do with throwing over the middle, crossing routes, rub routes, that sort of thing. Bears have seven receivers with 30 catches or more this year. That's just remarkable. I think they're tied for – they're one of four teams who do that. So they've proven all year long that they're not dependent on one person or even two, really. And that's what makes them good. Colston Loveland, by the way, finished as their leader in yards and catches. He did that by, I think, 28% of his catches and 26% of his yards came in the last 2 weeks of the season. So if the Bears have a number one receiver, if recent history is any indication, it's probably Colston Loveland and then everybody else, right?
Well, Ben Johnson drafted him to be that. He wasn't drafted to be just a guy when they've already got $50 million contract Cole Kmet sitting here. I mean, Ben Johnson took him because he thought this is going to be a frontline all-pro level tight end eventually. And tight end's a tough position. It's the toughest position for a rookie to play well at other than quarterback, in my opinion. And Colston Loveland, I feel like his learning curve hasn't been that slow. I feel like he was a contributor early and then has really come on late.
I seem to remember, though, that how many catches did he have through the first three games?
Oh, I don't know.
Like four? I mean, it was maybe two. He wasn't used regularly, but then seemed to pick it up. I'm going to look this up, Jason. Targets, six targets, three catches through the first three games of the season. Do you want to talk about picks here?
Yeah, who you got?
Should I duck or put a helmet on first? Something
it's
like
okay, that. Man. Just say it.
The Sun-Times is split.
Well, you are just finding a million ways not to answer
I'm
that
gonna
get, simple
we'll,
question.
We'll get there. This is called teasing.
I mean, you've answered it by not answering it.
Two of the five of us have picked the Packers, and I am one of the two. There we go. I've got the Packers, 27.
That was the most circuitous route.
We got there.
I mean, that was like Matt Nagy level talking in circles before you finally get the answer.
We got there. I've got the Packers, 27-24. The next time the Bears lead the Packers in regulation this season will be the first time the Bears have led the Packers in regulation this season. The defense just scares me. The last two games they've given up 929 yards. And last I checked, that was almost 1,000 damn yards in two games. If they can hold them in the red zone, I think it will. I mean, I've got at 27-24, I think it's going to be close. But I think the difference is going to be that the Packers scheme up ways to score touchdowns rather than field goals.
The Bears weren't lucky to beat the Packers and avoid going 0-for-2 against them, but they avoided going 0-for-2 against the Packers in a way that is not repeatable. Mm-hmm. I mean, that formula that got them the win at Soldier Field, that's not ever going to happen again.
What is it? 8% of all onside kicks are recovered?
Yeah.
And they got an onside kick
plus everything else that happened. I mean, it's not a sustainable formula. Well, who has the Packers and who has the Bears? That's my first question. Give me the list.
Steve Greenberg and I have the Packers, and I'm going to give you the Steve score because it's similar to mine. I'm 27-24 Packers. Steve is 27-23 Packers.
What is the widest margin? So that means me and Potash and Scoop have the Bears. What's the widest margin any of the five of us have for this game?
Four.
That's the point, really.
Yeah.
More than who picked who. The point is that everybody's got this as a four-point game, a four-point margin or less. And why wouldn't you? You have two teams, Patrick. And finally, I mean, this is progress for the Bears because this quote-unquote rivalry has been a joke for years. And it has probably not been that much of a rivalry to the Packers because they've had bigger fish to fry in the division with the Vikings and more recently the Lions. Now you have the Bears and Packers on even footing. Nobody would dispute that in Green Bay or Chicago that these teams are on level ground against each other for the first time in years. And the results bore it out. You have them playing two games this year where one goes down to Caleb Williams throwing into the end zone from short range with the option to tie or win the game on the two-point conversion afterward if he hadn't thrown an interception. And then the other one, you have Caleb Williams and the Bears winning in overtime, tied after 60 minutes of football.
You don't
get closer than that.
No, you don't. The aggregate score is a difference of one, and the only reason it's the Packers outscored the Bears by one was they didn't have to kick a field goal or kick an extra point after DJ Moore caught the touchdown in overtime.
Yeah, if you had gotten the freebie extra point, it would have been a complete tie scoring-wise. Mm-hmm. And it feels that way. It looks that way when you watch them. Now, granted, that's with Jordan Love missing more than half of that second game. That's with Micah Parsons now being out for the year. But he'll be out. I mean, he's not like he's coming back Saturday. So that's not really a factor right now. I think these teams are really, really, really even. I think they both have a good head coach. They both have a good quarterback. They both have a lot of strengths and weaknesses outside of that. And they're just even. The biggest surprise Saturday would be if somebody ran away with it by 10 or 14 points.
Yes, absolutely.
Either one.
Question for you before we get out, and maybe this is a little bit of a bummer, but maybe not. If the Packers beat the Bears tonight to end their season, does that change any of what we have seen thus far this season and what we've analyzed and declared to be an overwhelmingly positive, encouraging, thrilling season?
Not at all. I mean, you really more than anything, as far as you want to look at big picture and you want to look at going forward, you really want to see Caleb Williams play well in a playoff game. That will tell you a lot, I think, about where this is headed in 2026. But I don't. You couldn't look at a season where they climb to 11-6 and get the number two seed and have all of this positive trajectory going forward and then write that off after if they were to fizzle at the end. I don't think so. I think that winning a playoff game against anybody, but especially against Green Bay, would really stamp this as a different season. The Bears haven't won a playoff game since 2011.
Since before any of our children were born? Is that right?
Yeah. Since 2011.
Right.
Beating Seattle to get to the NFC Championship game. That's the third longest drought or fourth longest drought in the league. The Jets and the Dolphins and maybe somebody else have gone longer. Winning a playoff game, there is no asterisk ever on winning a playoff game. And there certainly wouldn't be in this case going against a pretty solid Green Bay, a good Green Bay team.
Jason, we will be there and we will record afterwards. Until then, you can follow Jason and myself on social media. Check us out. Sun-Times website, on the app, and if you live in town, buy a paper. It's Packers Bears Saturday night. Have fun watching, and we will have fun working. He's Jason. I'm Pat. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back again real soon.